Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Lead with Levity podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Walker, and I am so excited to keep this podcast going, to keep it going with great guests who have so much to share with you about their experiences in the workplace, helping organizations do what they do best. So if you haven't already, I encourage you to go ahead and subscribe. And feel free after this to bring the conversation over to Facebook or LinkedIn and let me know what you think. And if there are any other topics that you're interested in hearing about, I want to know. I want to make sure that this podcast is as relevant to you as it is to me. So that said, our show today is going to be all about storytelling, empathy, and what we can do to ensure that we are crafting messaging that aligns really well with the stories that we want others to know about us. Today's guest is Maria Ross. Maria is the head of Red Slice, a marketing firm, where they teach clients how to tell unforgettable stories that make customers nod. Yes, yes, yes. Think, laugh, and feel genuinely moved and inspired to take action. Maria has gone through some life-altering events, and hopefully we'll have a conversation about that today as well. Maria is a marketer and storytelling expert, and she's authored a couple of books now, one being The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success, and Reboot plus Reframe, How a Freak Brain Aneurysm Flipped My Entrepreneurial Switch. Maria has quite a story to tell, and I look forward to exploring empathy as well as the art of storytelling with her, and I look forward to sharing her experiences with you today. So she should be on in a second. While we wait, let's go ahead and listen to some highlights from today's episode.
It's time for a sneak peek.
Their biggest challenge is lack of clarity. So I think, you know, and I'm guilty of this too in my own business. We know our business and ourselves, whether I'm working with someone on their personal brand or I'm working with a company on sort of their corporate story. We know too much, right? So we think everything is important and we muddy the waters by throwing everything at the wall and hoping something will resonate for somebody. And all that does is confuse them and make them go away. So what I really help them do is pare down their story and articulate it in a way that's very clear, that's very compelling and very concise. And then they can build their entire marketing strategy off of that so that everything works together from a consistency standpoint. Because really clarity and consistency are the keys to effective branding. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how much advertising you buy. At the end of the day, if your message is clear and consistent and it is compelling to the people that matter, then you can be successful in whatever business you're in.
And now on with the show.
I'm Dr. Heather Walker, and this is Lead with Levity. I help leaders create awesome work environments where communication is light, enjoyable, and uplifting. I shed light on the power of levity at work. Imagine just how much you can get done in that kind of environment. Come explore with me. Welcome back to the Lead with Levity podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Walker, and today's guest is Maria Ross. Maria is the founder and chief brand strategist for Red Slice. She's also an author and speaker. Some of her latest books have been The Empathy Edge, Harnessing the Value of Compassion as an Engine for Success, and Reboot plus Reframe, How a Freak Brain Aneurysm Flipped My Entrepreneurial Switch. Maria, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I am curious, what is Red Slice all about? How did you come up with that? Why is it so red and what is it a slice of?
And what is it a slice of? I know, totally. So I had a very successful corporate career for a really long time, both on the client and agency sides, and worked in marketing, worked in all facets of marketing. I was initially a management consultant, but worked in communications, branding, advertising, website strategy, sales enablement. I did a whole stint in Silicon Valley for about 10 years, working with software companies. And I decided to go off on my own in 2008, which I never thought I'd be. I wasn't an entrepreneurial type, but I went off on my own to start my own consultancy and honestly just do work I loved with people I liked. That was really what I wanted it to be about. Mm. But on the side, I had this personal blog because I've been writing since I was about 6 years old. And I had this personal blog that was about theater, and I'm an actress in my spare time. So I would talk about acting and film and wine and all this kind of stuff. And since I had so many passions, I was like, well, this is kind of a slice, you know, different slices of my passion. And I decided to call it Red Slice just because I have red hair. Hmm. And then when I started my own consultancy, I thought, you know, it's a brand consultancy. It's about standing out. It's about being intriguing, being compelling. I couldn't just call it Ross Consulting. So I was like, why don't I just borrow the name of my personal blog? And Red Slice was born. And I've really adopted it to be about what I do for my clients, which are either solo entrepreneurs or fast growth businesses. I help them stand out and connect with their target audiences and create a really compelling, unique, authentic brand story so that they, again, can better connect with their customers and really amplify their message in the world. So it's been very fun because then, you know, you do stand out and they say, what does Red Slice mean? And that's the whole idea.
Right. It's a conversation starter. I love it.
It is. It is.
So for the individuals that you work with, the solopreneurs, the entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. the companies, what do you see being their biggest challenge when they come to you?
Their biggest challenge is lack of clarity. So I think, you know, and I'm guilty of this too in my own business. We know our business and ourselves, whether I'm working with someone on their personal brand or I'm working with a company on sort of their corporate story. We know too much, right? So we think everything is important and we muddy the waters by throwing everything at the wall and hoping something will resonate for somebody. And all that does is confuse them and make them go away. So what I really help them do is pare down their story and articulate it in a way that's very clear, that's very compelling and very concise. And then they can build their entire marketing strategy off of that so that everything works together from a consistency standpoint. Because really clarity and consistency are the keys to effective branding. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how much advertising you buy. At the end of the day, if your message is clear and consistent and it is compelling to the people that matter, then you can be successful in whatever business you're in.
So I've definitely heard that the art of storytelling is really important in business. And when I think about storytelling, initially, I remember, gosh, this is maybe 8 years ago or something. And someone was like, you know what? We're going to learn storytelling here. It's like, what
does that mean?
Yeah. And why do you want me to go off? And now I'm a brand ambassador and I have to tell stories about our company. What does this mean?
Right.
So when we talk about storytelling, is it really as simple as going back to what you learned about writing good fiction or nonfiction and putting prose together and, you know, you've got to have the body and you've got to have a hook and you've got to have this, like, is it any different than that?
It's partly that. I think a lot of those rules around understanding what your main point is, going back to the clarity issue, is if you throw something at people that's like nine different things they have to remember, they remember nothing. But if you have a very clear message of it's what I call like your headline messages, and then they can learn all these other things about you after they're already hooked, right? But the trap we fall into is let's talk about every benefit under the sun, and they're not really weaving a story for people that they can grasp onto and be attracted to, because we get scared, right? We get scared that, like, well, but what if the person's interested in this? I have to mention this too. And what if the person's interested in that? And so it's really just being clear on your theme. I guess you could go back to essay writing 101. It's being very clear on your theme and your premise and building the story that supports that. So, you know, that's where the authenticity comes in. You don't just want to be out there telling any story about your business. It has to be true. And this is where, you know, culture and brand are very much the two sides of the same coin, because culture is living the brand and the external brand is actually conveying that message to the world. So when we talk about storytelling in business, it's really just about giving people something to emotionally connect to. And yes, this is true for B2B as well as B2C, because at the end of the day, it's a human being that you're trying to attract, right? Not a robot or an automaton.
Right.
So we have to be able to tell a story that gets people to know, like, and trust us, that gets them to maybe see themselves in an aspirational way. Maybe that gets them to see the company or the brand in a way that's like, oh, I understand what they stand for and I believe in that, so I want to support that too. So that's the trend. You know, it's funny because now everyone's talking about storytelling, and really brand has been storytelling for years and years and years. It was just never called that. So there's data. For example, there was a Forbes article that I referenced in the book, The Empathy Edge, that talked about, you know, one of the big quote unquote trends in marketing is creating an emotional connection for customers. Mm-hmm. And really that's storytelling. You know, if someone just tells you about the features and functions of their product, people care, but they're not going to be emotionally invested in that. But if you explain what your product, how your product can improve their life, improve their work, ease their stress level, or make them healthier, or remove some pain for them, or make them money, or save them money, whatever. It's something we are much more likely to grab onto and say, I want to be a part of that. I want to actually support that company and that tribe. And one of the best ways that companies or people can stand out is through that story. Because, for example, like what I do, I'm a brand strategist. There's like 9,700 of us in just California alone. So how you stand out is not just what you do, but how you do it. What is your philosophy? What is your approach to your work? How are you different from one of your, you know, any of your competitors? That's the story you want to tell, because that's going to attract a certain type of customer or client who is like, yeah, I'm down with that. I want to be part of it. And it also could repel other people that say, that's not so much for me. And that's okay, because at least you're being clear. You're taking a stand.
Right. So that focuses a lot on what's going on, the messaging that we deliver, so that we're managing impressions outside of our organization. How do we apply that within the organization so that we're engaging people with stories? Mm-hmm.
I think that that's part of the culture component, and that, you know, companies that are really successful, if you think of like Airbnb or you think of REI, and these are brands I've written about in my latest book, The Empathy Edge, but I also wrote a book before that called Branding Basics for Small Business. And I talked a lot about different companies doing this really well, is that they are authentically living their brand from the inside out. So it's not just stories for the external audience. It's also cultural. It's also, this is what we stand for internally as a company, as a workplace. This is how we value you as an employee. This is how things are done here, for example. And that shouldn't conflict with what your external image is, because again, you can't just sort of slap a coat of brand paint on your business and say, we're innovative because we say we're innovative, or we're edgy and playful because we say we're edgy and playful. You actually have to be those things,
right,
to make it authentic. And so those are the internal stories. That's why, you know, again, culture and brand are the flip sides of the same coin. And that's what authenticity means. People interpret, you know, it's like the word du jour kind of grates on me, but it's all it is that you are what you say you are. And if you are what you say you are, then that means internally you're acting in that way. You're telling those stories. A lot of times when I work with fast growth companies and small to mid-sized businesses, part of what we do as the brand strategy is collect the stories that support the brand position and the brand message. Like, what are those famous stories that everybody tells internally about what it's like to work here, or that one time when we first started out, or the origin story of our founder? Mm. Those are all things that really make the tribe gel together and say, okay, this is who we are, and this is what it's like to work here. And if you like that, you should work here. And if you're not down with that, you shouldn't work here.
What about organizations that are trying to maybe
reinvent themselves.
Yeah. So we mm-hmm. have a story, but we don't like mm-hmm. it.
Like Walmart? No, just kidding. I'm just joking. Yeah. But no, it's true. It's possible, right? Yeah. It's just, I like to think of brand as just like our personalities, right? And
right.
people change, they get older, they get wiser, they mature, and the market changes, and you could be a very different thing than you were when you first started. Or you could, you go through a phase of really poor leadership, for example, like what Uber's trying to do right now. Mm. They're trying to like recover from the trauma of their founder and his bad behavior. And they have a new CEO, and they're working on changing the culture. They're working on changing public perception. It can be done, but it has to be authentic. And it has to be something that it's not just the CEO saying, today I decide this is what we're going to be. Right?
Right.
It has to have buy-in from the whole rest of the organization. And that's why when I do my client projects, for example, I lead a cross-functional brand workshop, which often the heads of marketing who bring me in, sometimes they're down with it and they get it. Sometimes they're like, I don't understand why HR has to be there, or I don't understand why the head of product needs to be there. Like, isn't this a marketing exercise? And the soul of your business is not just a marketing exercise.
Right.
It impacts everybody and how they live out their work every day. So the more you can have buy-in from across the organization and give people that space to say, here's what I think we stand for from my vantage point. I work in customer care. I work in sales. I work in HR. I work in admin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's who I think we are. You then create a cultural articulation, that's you articulate that story so that it resonates for everyone and is true for everyone, and not just, hey, everybody buy into this story because I'm the CEO and I say this is our new story. Like, how are we operationalizing that story? What policies and practices are we going to put in place so that it's not just a nice poster on the wall? Which is how, we can get into that when we talk about being an empathetic brand, but how do we live that out every day at every level internally and for our customers that actually proves we are what we say we are?
Yeah. Yes.
yes to all of it.
Yes. One thing that really attracted me to wanting to reach out to you to come onto the podcast is your work on empathy. And mm-hmm. One area that I focus on is levity at work.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love it.
We're talking about, right? We're talking about interactions that are amusing, buoyant, and edifying. And when we mm-hmm. stack those interactions, we start to create an environment where teams can really flourish. People trust each other. They work really well together. They can solve problems creatively together. And in order mm-hmm. for those things to happen, though, we have to do the work. And mm-hmm. a part of this podcast is talking about the work that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And you mm-hmm. can't have levity without things like empathy, for example, to be able
right.
to put yourself into someone else's shoes, to know what would actually be appropriate at any
right.
given time, mm-hmm. so that you're not hurting, as opposed to helping and supporting and growing another person. So mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about that. Like, you're a marketer and you're working mm-hmm. on empathy and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
How? Why? It's so funny. Well, first of all, I just side note, I have to say how much I appreciate the work you're doing in the world with this message, because as you mentioned, I wrote a memoir about something very different from branding and marketing, which was recovering from a brain injury. And it's called Rebooting My Brain. And one of my kind of life lessons from that experience is to find the humor and always be able to find the humor in difficult situations, because it clears your mind, it lowers your blood pressure, it enables you to think more clearly when you're in a space where you can sort of laugh at yourself and laugh at your situation, no
right.
matter how dire it is. So I love what you're saying about that. But yeah, it's kind of funny. So I'm a brand strategist working with companies, working with entrepreneurs, and not to bore you with the whole origin story of that book, but suffice it to say, there was a presidential election in 2016. And regardless of what side you were on, there was just so much hate and incivility and just lack of compassion for other people and people that were different than ourselves. And I started to get worried as the mom of a, at the time, 2.5-year-old. Mm. And I was hearing the same thing from my clients and my colleagues, you know, other entrepreneurial colleagues saying like, well, what can we do about it? Like, we're feeling all these emotions and we're feeling all this empathy, but you know, I'm just a web designer, or I'm just, you know, I just sell software. Like, what can I do to make things better? You know, do we have to all go join the Peace Corps to make the world a better place? And so I started down this path of exploring empathy because, funnily enough, even from my corporate clients, I started hearing that more in conversations with the kind of brand story they wanted to tell. And it was, yes, it was still about like, we want to be seen as the best and the most innovative. And yet, but then they started talking about things like, we want to be seen as empathetic. We want to be seen as approachable. We want to be seen as socially responsible. And all of a sudden that it just started coming up in more and more conversations that people were wanting to use their work for good. Mm. And so I was like, okay, well, let me take that and let me figure out, you know, let's write a book about empathy at work. It was kind of a double entendre, like empathy at work and empathy at work.
Ah, yeah.
And which was the original title of the book. But yeah, so, you, and then I started researching and interviewing and gathering, you know, what are the brands that are doing this right? You couldn't really have that conversation, kind of going back to what we said before, without talking about companies that were doing things right from the inside out. And so it was really about, how does empathy exist in an organization at the leadership level or the individual level, like me as an individual, mm-hmm. and then as a culture, so internally as a culture, as a team working together. And then finally, how does that parlay into the external impression that we have with our customers, with our clients, with the community? And so I wanted to sort of, write a playbook for companies and individuals and entrepreneurs to say, here's how we can use our platform, whatever it is, to have an impact and to put this into action, and normalize compassion and empathy as a vehicle for success rather than hatred, greed, you know, competitiveness, that there's another script we can write. And here, look at all this data and look at all these case studies and look at all these other companies that are making this work. They're adopting. This isn't sort of like this fluffy thing you can push off to the side, but that if you want to actually impact your bottom line, Mr. Skeptic that might be reading my book, here's some proof for you that being empathetic and compassionate is actually good for your business. And what I've seen happen in my career is you can actually transform people from the outside in. They might initially be adopting empathetic practices or an empathetic brand or empathetic policies because of pure greed, mm-hmm. because of pure selfishness. But once they start to do those things and take those actions, there's sort of no going back. Like, they're being empathetic. They're still creating the good in the world, right?
Right.
And they changes their feedback from the world, and they start to go, oh, I want more of that. That feels good. You know, it's that whole, I spoke to psychologists for the book about, you know, one of the psychologists I spoke to works with autistic children. Mm-hmm. And in that work, initially they're working with them to help them adopt more empathy through very rote checklists of things. So not because they have some pure intention of wanting to be more empathetic, it's somebody's telling them to take these different actions. And what happens is as their prefrontal cortex starts to adopt that habit, they get different feedback and they want to do it more. And then it becomes part of their standard operating procedure over time. So that's what I'm trying to do, is say, hey, do this, try this at work, try this with your company. Yes, it's going to feel weird at first. It's probably going to be a little forced, even if you're doing it because you just want to help the bottom line, fine. But eventually that's going to impact you from the outside in. That's my sneaky goal.
Well, yeah. So it's those experiences, right, that transform you, mm-hmm. when you get to know someone else and you get to see what they're mm-hmm. going through, what their challenges are, what their hopes and dreams are. And then you realize, I feel for that person. I care. Yeah. Their issues, their concerns, their goals, their hopes, their dreams. I care about those things, too. And mm-hmm. Because I care for them. So I'm curious, after doing all of this work and gathering up all this information, of course, I know we need to go read the book. But are there any like key insights that you got from that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should mention, you know, people kind of joke with me, like, I'm not the most empathetic person. Empathy is one of my strengths, according to the Gallup Strength Finder. But, you know, ask my husband on any given day, and I don't know that he'd tell you I'm empathetic. But I'm learning a lot, too, because I am very reactionary. I can get very emotionally charged. And I think the important thing to your point that you just said is talking about empathy, not necessarily as feeling what the other person is feeling, although that can be part of it sometimes. But this is about, especially when we're talking in the work context, about perspective taking and mindset and how you gather information to make a decision. And when you're able to take the perspective of someone else and see things from their point of view, it doesn't necessarily mean you're doing what they want, quote unquote, because that's submission. That's not empathy. It just means you're making that a part of your decision-making process. So when you make a decision, it's done through a lens of empathy. And then when you deliver that decision, even if it's something someone doesn't want to hear, it's done with, okay, what can I do to make this easier for you? What can I do to bring you on board? Versus just, here's what you're going to do, and I don't really care about your hopes and dreams and inspirations and motivations. So, you know, I think that's the important thing about at work is the pushback I get a lot is, well, then you're just giving into people whining all the time. Mm. And that's not what it really means. It's really about perspective taking and mindset. So when you look at it through that lens, it's like, oh, it really does start with me, right? It doesn't have to be, well, I'm in a really toxic work culture, so there's no way that I can be empathetic to other people. You can become that model of success within your organization by being more empathetic in your decision-making and your actions. And then people look at you and go, wow, she's successful and she's being kind and she's being compassionate and she's not difficult to work with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So one of the biggest things I learned, and it's the number one habit and trait of how you can flex your own empathy muscle that I have listed in the book, because it really is the foundation to all of it, is to be able to practice presence. And whatever mindfulness or presence looks like to you, it's that ability to sort of take that step back and be where you are, be in your body, and then be able to have a clear enough mind that you're not so, your head's not so full of your own junk. Because when that happens, ego gets in the way, and ego is the killer of empathy. Hmm. When you have a clear mind, when you are able to take a step back and not be reactionary, you can actually have the space to take another person's point of view and not necessarily be confrontational or defensive, but it enables you to ask more questions and find out more, which is one of the second things I learned, is that curiosity is the number one trait of empathetic people. Because when you ask questions and find out more, you actually can learn what the other person's perspective is, what the other person's point of view is, and you can understand the context for why they feel the way they feel, what motivates them, and also why they're acting the way they're acting. So as an example, if you're in the workplace and you have a really difficult coworker, mm-hmm. try to ask questions, try to get curious, you know, why are they so confrontational? What does success look like for them? Why do they think that that's a better course of action than the one that you're about to take? What's going on for them personally? You know, sometimes those disagreements could be over something like them helping an aging parent at home, and they're under a lot of stress. And they're actually not a difficult person. They're just overwhelmed.
Right.
So it's, but we never, you know, if we can't practice that presence, that number one bit of mindfulness, we have no room to try to even desire to figure that out. And so whatever, you know, whatever mindfulness or presence looks like to you, I spoke to mindfulness experts for the book, and they said, you know, even 5 or 10 minutes a day of just what, you know, what is it for you? Is it meditation? Is it yoga? Is it going for a walk? Is it sitting with your coffee without your phone on? Is it deep breathing? You know, practice it for a little bit each day, and it will change your interactions with other people. And I think that's so important. I think at the end of the day, we can make all the excuses about, well, our workplace is not like that, and my boss is not like that, and it's always going to be toxic, and it's always going to be this. But you can start, you can impact what you can impact, and that's yourself. And if you can ground yourself, practice presence, you know, listen more, get curious, it can change the way that you interact with other people and often change the outcome of decisions and productivity.
Yes. Yes. And I would agree completely with that. I would even add, the next time you go up to someone and say, hi, how are you? Pause. Take a moment to pause and listen to the response. Dive into that response. Too often, especially here in the States, we use hi, how are you as I don't know what we use it as.
Like acknowledgement or something. Yeah. Right. Like, hey, I saw you. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't tell me about your day. I don't care. So but that's not how it should be. Take a second, ask the question and pause and then ask some follow-ups, because you'd be amazed by what people have to say. And So that's
well, and being vulnerable. Yeah, being vulnerable helps with that. So a practice that I've adopted to kind of start, again, I'm not perfect, but
none of us
that
are.
I've started in recent years that kind of changes the dynamics of my interactions is when someone says, how are you? I take a pause and say, how am I? I'm good, like, or I'm okay, or I'm a little frazzled right now. And I give them an honest answer to invite and say, how are you? And I say it as not the cursory, how are you? But I look at them and I say, how are you? And that often invites them to be honest with, well, how am I?
You know? Right.
And so, even when I work with clients and we're both, you know, I'm type A too, but we're go, go, go. It's sort of like I start every workshop and every meeting sort of with a like, huh. We're all here. We made it. Let's take a breath. How's everybody doing? You know, and give people a chance to check in. But I think that vulnerability, and one of the folks I interviewed for the book, who runs a ghostwriting company, they talk about, he does a talk called Vulnerability is Sexy. And it really is about, you have to be able to take that chance that if you're a little bit vulnerable, it'll allow somebody else to be a little bit vulnerable too. You're not necessarily going to get hurt by being a little bit vulnerable with someone. It can invite more good than bad, which I think I've learned over the years, because I think we all have as we get older.
Right. And especially if you're in a leadership position, you know, if you are showing that you can be vulnerable and everything will be okay, you're giving your employees the permission to do so as well. And that's so important. Because they're looking to you for the model. They're looking to see how should I behave in this particular instance? And is this person going to think I'm wild and out there if I tell them, no, I'm not having a good day?
Yeah. And just be honest about it. I mean, if you think about some of the most toxic managers you've ever worked for, and I've done a lot of events in the last few months, and I always start out with, how many of you have actually worked in a toxic environment? And everybody raises their hand, right? And if you think about that, vulnerability was probably not an asset of that leader. And a few of the leaders I spoke to for the book talked about they're super successful because they've adopted a mindset of servant leadership, which is about, I'm not here. I don't necessarily have all the answers. I mean, I have expertise, but I will admit when I'm wrong. I will admit when I don't know. I'm here to support you, not the other way around. And those leaders have been the most successful leaders in business. So when we say, you know, emotion and vulnerability doesn't have a place in business, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Right. So if someone is interested in finding out more information about empathy, vulnerability, storytelling, where should they go?
Well, they can check out my main website, which is red-slice.com. And there's all kinds of great information there. They can click under books and find The Empathy Edge, which is also available on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com and all the usual suspects and some bookstores as well. And I would love for people to connect with me on Instagram, Red Slice Maria, or LinkedIn, I'm Maria J. Ross, or Facebook, I am Red Slice, and I'm also Red Slice on Twitter. So I love for people to stay connected that way. And they can also join my fabulous email tribe, Red Slice Nation, and get a freebie that way. If they go to the website, they could sign up and get a free guide for the 5 benefits of running a business with empathy, which is really fun to put together.
I bet. Especially hearing those stories. Whew.
I know. Well, that's the thing is, again, I love telling stories, and that this whole book is really a case. I'm making a case to say, hey, we can change the script on what it means to be successful. Look at all these people and organizations that have been successful, and they didn't have to sell their souls in the process.
So, I love it.
There's hope. Yeah.
I love it. So everyone listening, we'll have links to all of those resources in the show notes. After the conversation, please join us. Join us on social media, because we want to know what is working for you. What stories do you have? What challenges do you have? We want to connect. So Maria,
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
Thanks for listening to the Lead with Levity podcast. Go to www.leadwithlevity.com to access show notes and other resources.